not depend on Ruark so much, girl. Randall Thor gave Carrion to you to tend. Let most men have a finger, and they will have the whole hand before you know. Let a clan chief have a finger, and he will have the entire arm. It is true, Amis murmured. Ruark is the shade of my heart, but it is true. Pulling slim riding gloves from behind her belt, Berylaine began tugging them on. He reminds me of my father. Too much so, sometimes. For an instant she grimaced ruefully. But he gives very good advice, and he knows when to loom and how much. I think even Aes Sedai must be impressed by Ruark staring at them. Amis laughed in her throat. He is impressive. I will send him to you. She kissed Berylaine lightly on the forehead and each cheek. Egwene stared. That was how a mother kissed her son or daughter. What was going on between Berylaine and the Wise Ones? She could not ask, of course. Such a question would be shaming to her and to the Wise Ones. To Berylaine, too, though Berylaine would not know it, and Egwene would not mind shaming Berylaine until her hair fell out. As Berylaine turned to leave the tent, Egwene put a hand on the woman's arm. They must be handled carefully. They'll not be friendly toward Rand, but the wrong words, a wrong move, could make them open enemies. That was true enough, but not what she needed to say. She would rather have her tongue torn out than ask a favor of Berylaine. I have dealt with Aes Sedai before, Egwene Sedai, the other woman said dryly. Egwene refrained from drawing a deep breath. It had to be done, but she would not let this woman see how hard it was. Elida means no good to Rand, no more than a weasel means to a chicken, and these Aes Sedai are Elida's. If they learn of an Aes Sedai on Rand's side here where they can reach her, they might just disappear one day soon after. Looking into Berylaine's unreadable face, she could not make herself say more. After a long moment, Berylaine smiled. Egwene Sedai, I will do whatever I can for Rand. Both smile and tone of voice insinuated. Girl, Cerulea said sharply, and for a wonder spots of color bloomed in Berylaine's cheeks. Not looking at Egwene, Berylaine said in a carefully neutral voice, I would appreciate it if you did not tell Ruark. In fact, she was not looking at anyone, but she tried to ignore Egwene's presence. We will not, Amis put in quickly, leaving Cerulea with her mouth open. We will not. The repetition was directed at Cerulea with a blend of firmness and asking, and at last the eldest wise one nodded, if somewhat grudgingly. Berylaine actually sighed with relief before ducking out of the tent. That child has spirit, Cerulea laughed as soon as Berylaine was gone. Reclining on the cushions again, she patted the space next to her for Egwene. We should find the right husband for her, a man to match her. If such exists among wetlanders. Wiping her hands and face with the damp cloth Rodera brought, Egwene wondered whether that was enough opening to ask about Berylaine in good honor. She accepted a teacup of green seafolk porcelain and took her place in the circle of wise ones. If one of the others responded to Cerulea, that might be enough. Are you certain these Aes Sedai mean harm to the Karakarn? Amis asked instead. Egwene colored, thinking about gossip when there were important matters to attend. Yes, she replied quickly, then more slowly, at least, I don't know that they mean to harm him exactly. Not intentionally, anyway. Elida's letter had mentioned all the honor and respect he deserved. How much did a former Red Sister think any man who could channel deserved? But I don't doubt they will want to control him somehow, make him do what Elida wants. They aren't his friends. How much were the Salidar Aes Sedai his friends? Light, she needed to talk with Nynaeve and Elaine. And they will not care that he is the Karakarn, Cerulea grunted sourly. You believe they will try to harm you? Bear asked, and Egwene nodded. If they discover I'm here, she tried to cover a shiver by sipping her mint tea. Whether as a handle on Rand or as an unsupervised accepted, they would do their best to haul her back to the tower. They'll not leave me free if they can help it. Elida will not want Rand listening to anyone but her. Bear and Amis exchanged grim looks. the answer is simple. Cerulea sounded as if it had all been decided. You will stay among the tents, and they will not find you. Wise ones avoid Aes Sedai in any case. If you remain with us a few more years, we will make a fine wise one of you. Egwene almost dropped her cup. You flatter me, she said carefully. But sooner or later I will have to go. Cerulea did not look convinced. Egwene had learned to hold her own with Amys and Bear after a fashion, but Cerulea... Not soon, I think, Bear told her, with a smile to take the sting out. You have much to learn yet. Yes, and eager to get back to it, Amys added. Egwene struggled not to blush, and Amys frowned. You look odd. Did you overuse yourself this morning? I was sure you had recovered enough. I have, Egwene said hastily. Truly, I have. I haven't had a headache in days. It was the dust running back here, and the crowd in the city was more than I remembered, and I was so excited I didn't breakfast very well. Cerulea motioned to Rodera. Bring some honey bread, if there is any, and cheese, and any fruit you can find. She poked Egwene in the ribs. A woman should have some flesh to her. That from a woman who looked as if she had been left in the sun till most of her flesh had dried away. Egwene did not really mind eating. She had been too excited to eat this morning. But Cerulea watched every bite go down, and her scrutiny made swallowing a little difficult. That and the fact that they wanted to discuss what to do about the Aes Sedai. If the Aes Sedai were hostile to Rand, they would have to be watched, and a way found to safeguard him. Even Cerulea was a bit edgy about the possibility that they might be putting themselves against Aes Sedai directly. Not afraid. It was going against custom that made them uneasy. But whatever was necessary to protect the Karakarn had to be done. For Egwene's part, she worried that they might turn Cerulea's suggestion that she remain among the tents into a command. There would be no way to evade that one. No way to avoid 50 eyes except by staying inside her own tent. How did Rand travel? The Wise Ones would do whatever was necessary so long as it did not touch Jito. Wise Ones might interpret it differently here and there, but they held to their interpretation as tightly as any other Aiel. Light Rodera was Shido, one of thousands captured in the battle that drove the Shido away from the city, but the Wise Ones treated her no differently than any other Gaishine, and as far as Egwene could see, Rodera behaved no differently than any other Gaishine, not in the slightest. They would not go against Jito, no matter how necessary it might be. Fortunately, the subject did not come up. Unfortunately, the question of her health did. The Wise Ones did not know healing or how to check someone's health with the power. Instead, they tested with their own methods. Some seemed familiar from when she had studied under Nynaeve to become a wisdom, peering into her eyes, listening to her heart through a hollow wooden tube. Some were distinctly Aiel. She touched her toes until she felt dizzy, jumped up and down in one place until she thought her eyes would bounce out of her head, and ran around the Wise One's tents until spots swam before her, then had water poured over her head by a Gaishine, drank as much as she could hold, gathered up her skirts, and ran some more. Aiel were great believers in hardiness. Had she been a step too slow, had she staggered to a halt before Amys said she could, they would have decided her health was not sufficiently recovered after all. When Cerulea finally nodded and said, "You are as sound as a maiden, girl," Egwene was swaying and gulping for air. A maiden would not have been, she was sure. Still, she felt pride. She had never thought of herself as soft, but she knew very well that before she began living with the Aiel, she would have fallen on her face halfway through the test. "Another year," she thought, "and I will run as well as any far Dar Aes Sedai." On the other hand, she was hardly up to returning to the city. She joined the Wise Ones in their sweat tent. For once they did not make her pour water over the hot rocks. Rodera did that, luxuriating in the damp heat as it relaxed her muscles, and only left because Ruark and two other clan chiefs, Timalan of the Miagoma and Indirian of the Kodara, joined them, tall, massive, graying men with hard, sober faces. That sent her diving out of the tent to hastily wrap her shawl around her. She always expected to hear laughter when she did that, but the Aiel never seemed to understand why she hurried from the sweat tent whenever men came in. It would have fit right into Aiel humor if they had, but luckily they just did not make the connection, for which she was very glad. Gathering the rest of her clothes in her arms from the neat piles outside the sweat tent, she hurried back to her own. The sun was sitting low now, and after a light meal she was ready to fall asleep, too tired to even think of Telairanriod. Too tired to remember most of her dreams, either. That was something the wise ones had been teaching her, but most of those she did remember were about Gawain. Chapter 25. Like Lightning and Rain. For some reason, when Coenda came to wake her in the gray before dawn, Egwene felt refreshed despite her dreams. Refreshed and ready to see what she could learn in the city. One long yawn and stretch and she was on her feet, humming as she washed and dressed hurriedly, hardly taking the time to brush her hair properly. She would have hurried away from the tents without wasting time on breakfast, but Cerulea saw her, and that put an abrupt end to that notion, which turned out to be just as well. "You should not have left the sweat tent so soon," Amice told her, taking a bowl of porridge and dried fruit from Rodera. Close to 24 wise ones had crowded into Amice's tent, and Rodera, Coenda, and a white-robed man named Doylan, another Shido, were scurrying to serve them all. "Ruark had much to say about your sisters. Perhaps you can add more." After months of pretense, Egwene did not need to think to know she meant the Tower Embassy. "I will tell you what I can. What did he say?" "For one thing, that there were 6 Aes Sedai, and 2 of them red, not 1. Egwene could not believe the arrogance, or perhaps stupidity, of Elida to have sent any at all, but at least a Grey was in charge. The wise ones, most lying in a large circle like the spokes of a wheel, some standing or kneeling in the spaces between, turned their eyes to Egwene as soon as the list of names was done. "I'm afraid I only know 2 of them," she said carefully. "There are a good many Aes Sedai after all, and I haven't been a full sister long enough to know many." Heads nodded. They accepted that. "Nisuna Bihara is fair-minded. She listens to all sides before reaching a conclusion, but she can find even the smallest flaw in what you say. She sees everything, remembers everything. She can glance at a page once and repeat it back word for word, or the same for a conversation she heard a year ago. Sometimes she talks to herself, though, speaks her thoughts without realizing it." "Ruark said she was interested in the Royal Library." Bear stirred her porridge, watching Egwene. "He said he heard her mutter something about seals." A quick murmur rippled through the other women, silenced when Cerulea cleared her throat loudly. Spooning up porridge, there were slices of dried plum and some kind of sweet berries in hers, Egwene considered. If Elida had put Swan to the question before she was executed, then she knew of 3 seals that were broken. Rand had 2 hidden. Egwene wished she knew where. He did not seem to trust anyone of late. And Nynaeve and Elaine had found 1 in Tanchico and carried it to Salidar, but Elida had no way of knowing about those. Unless perhaps she had spies in Salidar. No, that was speculation for another time, useless now. Elida must be searching desperately for the rest. Sending Nisuna to the 2nd greatest library in the world after that in the White Tower made sense, and swallowing some dried plum, she told them so. "I said as much last night," Cerulea growled. "Aeron, Colinda, Edara, you 3 go to the library. 3 wise ones should be able to find what can be found before 1 Aes Sedai." That produced 3 long faces. The royal library was huge. Still, Cerulea was Cerulea, and if the named women sighed and muttered, they put down their porridge bowls and left immediately. "You said you know 2, Cerulea went on before they were out of the tent. "Nisuna Bihara and who?"
"Sareen Nemdal," Egwene said. "You must understand, I do not know either well. Sareen is like most whites. She reasons everything out logically, and sometimes she seems surprised when somebody acts from the heart, yet she has a temper. Most of the time she keeps it tightly bottled, but put a foot wrong at the wrong time, and she can snap your nose off before you can blink. She listens to what you say, though, and she will admit she was wrong even after her temper has snapped. Well, once it mends, anyway." Putting a spoonful of berries and porridge into her mouth, she tried to study the wise ones without seeming to. No one appeared to have noticed her hesitation. She'd almost said Serene would send you to scrub floors before you could blink. The only way she knew either woman was from lessons as a novice. Nisuna, a slender Kandori with bird-like eyes, could tell when someone's attention drifted even with her back turned. She had taught several classes Egwene had been in. Egwene had only heard two lectures by Serene on the nature of reality, but it was hard to forget a woman who told you with absolute seriousness that beauty and ugliness were equally illusion, while wearing a face that would make any man look twice. "I hope you can remember more," Bear said, leaning toward her on an elbow. "It seems you are our only source of information." That did take a moment for Egwene to puzzle out. Yes, of course. Bear and Amis must have tried to look into the Aes Sedai's dreams last night, but Aes Sedai warded their dreams. It was a skill she regretted not learning herself before leaving the tower. "If I can. Where are their rooms in the palace?" If she was going to go near Rand the next time he came, it would help if she did not blunder into their apartments trying to find her way. Especially Nisuna's. Serene might not remember one particular novice, but Nisuna most certainly would. For that matter, one of those she did not know might, too. There had been a lot of talk about Egwene Alvear when she was in the tower. "They decline Berylaine's offer of shade even for one night," Amis frowned. Among Aiel, an offer of hospitality was always accepted. To refuse, even between blood enemies, was shaming. "They stay with a woman named Arillin, a noble among the tree killers. Ruark believes that Corrin's Saildane knew this Arillin before yesterday." "One of Corrin's spies," Egwene said with certainty. "Or one of the Grey Ajahs." Several wise ones muttered angrily under their breath. Cerulea snorted loudly in disgust, and Amis gave a heavy, disappointed sigh. Others had a different view. Corelna, a green-eyed hawk of a woman with grey heavy in her flaxen hair, shook her head doubtfully, while Tialin, a lean redhead with a sharp nose, looked at Egwene in open disbelief. Spying violated Jito, though how that squared with the dreamwalkers peeking into people's dreams whenever they liked was something Egwene had not worked out. There was no use pointing out that Aes Sedai did not follow Jito. They knew that. They just found it hard to really believe or understand about Aes Sedai or anyone. Whatever they thought, she would have wagered anything on being right. Galdrian, the last king of Cairhien, had had an Aes Sedai advisor before he was assassinated. Nianda Morwen had been all but invisible even before she disappeared following Galdrian's death. But one thing Egwene had learned was that she had occasionally visited the country estates of Lady Arillin. Nianda was a Grey. "They have apparently placed 100 guards under that roof," Bear said after a time. Her voice became very bland. "They say the city is still unsettled, but I think they fear the Aiel." Disturbingly interested looks appeared on a number of faces. 100? Egwene exclaimed. "They brought 100 men?" Amis shook her head. "More like 500. Timalan's scouts found most of them camped less than half a day north of the city. Ruark spoke of it, and Corrin Saildane said the men were a guard of honor, but they left most outside the city so as not to alarm us. They think they will escort the Karakarn to Tar Valon." Cerulea's voice could have cracked stone, and her expression made her tone seem soft. Egwene had not kept back the contents of Elida's letter to Rand. The wise ones liked it less every time they heard it. "Rand is not fool enough to accept that offer," Egwene said, but her mind was not on that. 500 men could be a guard of honor. Elida might well think the Dragon Reborn would expect something like that, even be flattered. A number of suggestions occurred to her, but she had to be careful. The wrong word might make Amis and Bear, or worse, Cerulea. Dodging Cerulea was like trying to climb out of a briar patch, give her commands that she could not obey, and still do what only she could, or would at least. "I assume the chiefs are keeping an eye on those soldiers outside the city?" "Half a day north. more like a full day, since they were not Aiel, was too far to be dangerous, but a little caution never hurt. Amice nodded. Cerilia looked at Egwene as though she had asked whether the sun was in the sky at midday. Egwene cleared her throat. Yes. The chiefs were not likely to make that sort of mistake. Well, these are my suggestions. If any of these Aes Sedai goes to the palace, some of you who can channel should go behind them and make sure they do not leave any sort of trap. They nodded. 2/3 of the women there could wield Sidar, some not much more than Cerilia, others equaling Amice, who was as strong as any Aes Sedai Egwene had yet met. The proportions were about the same for wise ones as a whole. Their skills differed from Aes Sedai's. Less in some places, more in a few, but generally just different. Yet they should be able to sniff out any unwelcome gifts. And we must make sure there are only 6. She had to explain. They had read Wetlander's books, but even those who could channel did not really know the rituals that had grown up around Aes Sedai dealing with men who had found Sidine. Among the Aiel, a man who learned he could channel thought he was chosen, and went north into the Blight to hunt the Dark One. None ever returned. For that matter, Egwene had not known the rituals either until she went to the tower. The stories she had heard before seldom bore any resemblance to the truth. Rand can handle 2 women at once, she finished. She knew that for a fact. He might even be able to handle 6, but if there are more than they've put themselves forward to be, then it is proof they have lied at the least, even if just by leaving something out. She almost winced at their frowns. If you lied, you incurred toe toward whoever you lied to. But in her case, it was necessary. It was. The rest of breakfast was taken up with the wise ones deciding who would go through the palace today and which chiefs could be trusted with choosing men and maidens to watch for more Aes Sedai. Some might be reluctant to put themselves against Aes Sedai in any way. The wise ones did not say that right out, but it was clear enough from what they did say, often sourly. Others might think any threat to the Karakarn, even from Aes Sedai, could best be handled by the spear. A few of the wise ones seemed to have moved toward that opinion, too. Cerilia stepped heavily on more than one oblique suggestion that the difficulty would be solved if the Aes Sedai were simply no longer there. In the end, Ruark and Mandalayne of the Darain were the only 2 they could agree on. "Make sure they don't choose any Siswai Aman," Egwene said. "Those would certainly resort to the spear at the slightest hint of a threat." The remark got her a great many stares, ranging from flat to wry. None of the wise ones were fools. One thing troubled her. Not one of them mentioned what she was used to hearing almost any time Aes Sedai were discussed, that the Aiel had once failed the Aes Sedai and would be destroyed if they did again. Aside from that one comment, Egwene kept out of the discussion, busying herself with a second bowl of porridge, with dried pear as well as plums, which earned an approving nod from Cerilia. It was not Cerilia's approval she was after. She was hungry, but mainly she hoped they would forget she was there. It seemed to work. Breakfast and discussion done, she strolled to her tent, then crouched just inside the entry flap, watching a small knot of wise ones make their way to the city, led by Amice. When they vanished through the nearest gate, she popped back outside again. There were Aiel everywhere, Gaishine and others, but the wise ones were all inside, and no one glanced at her as she walked toward the city wall, not too quickly. If anyone did take notice of her, they should think she was just off for her morning exercise. The wind picked up, blowing waves of dust and old ash from Foregate, but she maintained her steady pace, just out for exercise. In the city, the first person she asked, a lanky woman selling wrinkled apples from a cart for an exorbitant price, did not know directions to the Lady Arillin's palace, nor did a plump seamstress, who went wide-eyed at an apparent Aiel woman entering her shop, nor a balding cutler, who thought she would be much more interested in his knives. Finally, a narrow-eyed silversmith who told her closely the whole time she was inside her shop told her what she wanted. Striding away through the crowds, Egwene shook her head. She sometimes forgot how big a city like Cairhien really was, that not everyone knew where everything was. As it was, she got lost 3 times and had to ask directions 2 more before she found herself pressed against the side of a higher stable, peering around the corner at a squat pile of dark stone across the street, all narrow windows and angular balconies and stepped towers. It was small for a palace, though huge for a house. Arillin was somewhere just above the middle of Kyrian's nobility, if Egwene remembered rightly. Green-coated soldiers in breastplates and helmets stood guard on the broad front stairs, at every gate she could see, even on the balconies. Oddly, they all appeared to be young. Still, that was not what interested her. Women were channeling inside that building, and for her to feel it from down the street, for her to feel it so solidly, they were not handling small quantities of Sidar. The amount lessened suddenly, but it was still significant. She chewed at her lip. She could not tell what they were doing, not without seeing the flows, but by the same token they had to see the flows to weave them. Even if they were at a window, any flows directed out of the mansion that she could not see would have to be aimed south, away from the Sun Palace, away from everything. What were they doing? One set of gates swung open long enough to admit a match team of 6 bays drawing a closed black carriage with a sigil lacquered on its door, 2 silver stars on a field of red and green stripes. It worked northward through the crowd, the liveried driver plying a long whip as much to make people move aside as to encourage the horses. The Lady Arillin going somewhere? Or some of the embassy? Well, she had not come here just to stare. Edging back so only one eye peeked around the corner, just enough to see the great house, she drew a small red stone from her belt pouch, took a deep breath, and began to channel. If one of them was looking out on this side, she would be able to see the flows, but not Egwene. It had to be risked. The smooth stone was just that, a stone polished in a stream, but Egwene had learned this trick from Moiraine, and Moiraine had used a stone for a focus. A gem, as it happened, but the kind did not matter, so Egwene did too. It was mostly air she wove with a touch of fire, done just so. It allowed you to eavesdrop. Spy, the wise ones would say. Egwene did not care what it was called, so long as she learned something of what the Tower Eyes Sedai intended. Her weave touched a window opening carefully, oh so delicately, then another and another. Silence. Then...
"So I says to him," a woman's voice said in her ear, "if you want them beds made, you better leave off tickling my chin, Alwyn Rail."
Another woman giggled.
"Oh, you never did!"
Egwene grimaced. "Maids." A stout woman passing with a basket of bread on her shoulder peered at Egwene in a puzzled manner. As well she might, hearing 2 women's voices with only Egwene standing there and her lips not moving. Egwene solved it the quickest way she knew. She glared so furiously that the woman squeaked and nearly dropped her basket, dashing off into the crowd. Reluctantly, Egwene lowered the strength of her weave. She might not be able to hear as well, but better that than attracting gawkers. As it was, enough people glanced at her, an Aiel woman pressing herself against a wall, though no one more than hesitated before moving on. No one wanted trouble with Aiel. She put them out of her mind. Window by window she moved the weave, sweating furiously, and not only because of the already rising heat. Just one Aes Sedai glimpsing her flows, even if she did not recognize what they were, would know someone was channeling at them. They would have to suspect the purpose. Egwene inched back, leaving only half an eye showing. Silence. Silence. A rustle of some sort. Someone moving? Slippers on a carpet? No words, though. Silence. A man muttering, apparently emptying chamber pots and not at all pleased. Ears hot, she hurried on. Silence, silence, silence. Really believe this is necessary? Even in a whisper, as it seemed, the woman's voice sounded rich and full of herself.
"We must be prepared for any eventuality, Coiran," another woman replied in a voice like an iron rod. "I heard an arresting rumor."
A door closed firmly, cutting off the rest. Egwene slumped against the stable's stone wall. She could have screamed with frustration. The Grey Sister who was in charge, and the other had to be one of the Aes Sedai, or she would never have spoken so to Coiran. None better to say what she wanted to hear, and they had to walk away. What arresting rumor! What eventualities! How did they mean to prepare? The channeling inside the manor changed again, increasing. What were they up to? Drawing a deep breath, she began again, doggedly. As the sun climbed higher, she heard a great many usually unidentifiable noises and a good bit of servants' gossip and chatter. Somebody named Sari was going to have another baby, and the Aes Sedai were to have wine from Arin Drim, wherever that was, with their midday meal. The most interesting news was that Arilin had indeed been in that carriage, off to meet her husband in the country. For all the good knowing that did, a whole morning wasted. The front doors of the mansion swung wide, liveried servants bowing. The soldiers did not stiffen, but they did look more attentive. Nisuna Bihara walked out, followed by a tall young man who seemed to have been carved from a boulder. Egwene released her weave hastily, released Sidar, and took a deep, calming breath. This was no time to panic. Nisuna and her warder conferred, then the dark-haired brown sister peered down the street, first one way, then the other. She was definitely looking for something. Egwene decided that perhaps it was a good time to panic after all. Pulling herself back slowly so as not to draw Nisuna's sharp eye, she whipped around as soon as she was out of the woman's sight, gathered her skirts and ran, bullying her way into the crowd. For all of three strides she ran. Then she struck a stone wall, bounced off, and sat down in the street so hard that she bounced again on the hot paving blocks. Dazed, she stared up, becoming more dazed by the heartbeat. The stone wall was Gawain, staring down at her, looking as stunned as she. His eyes were the most brilliant blue, and those red-gold curls. She wanted to wrap those around her fingers again. She felt her face going scarlet. "You never did that," she thought firmly. "It was only a dream." "Did I hurt you?" he said anxiously, beginning to kneel beside her. She scrambled to her feet, dusting herself off hurriedly. If she could have had a wish granted right then, it would be never to blush again. Already they had attracted a ring of onlookers. Wrapping an arm in his, she drew him down the street the way she had been going. A glance over her shoulder revealed only the milling throng. Even if Nisuna came to that very corner, she would see nothing more. Still, Egwene did not slow. The crowd gave way for an Aiel woman and a man tall enough to be Aiel, even if he did wear a sword. The way he moved said he knew how to use it. He moved like a warder. After a dozen paces, she reluctantly unwound her arm from his. He caught her hand before it got away, though, and she let him hold it as they walked. "I suppose," he mused after a bit, "that I am to ignore the fact that you are dressed like an Aiel. The last I heard, you were in Ilion. And I suppose I should not comment on you running away from a palace where six Aes Sedai are staying. Strange behavior for an accepted." "I've never been in Ilion," she said, hastily looking around to see if any Aiel were close enough to have heard. Several glanced in her direction, but none were in earshot. Suddenly what he had said hit her. She took in his green coat, the same shade as those on the soldiers. "You're with them. The Tower Aes Sedai." Light! She was a fool not to have realized as soon as she saw him. His face softened. It had been very hard for an instant. "I command the guard of honor the Aes Sedai have brought to escort the dragon reborn to Tar Valon." His voice was a curious blend, wryness and anger and weariness. If he chooses to go, at least. And if he was here. "I understand he appears and disappears. Coiran is vexed." Egwene's heart was in her throat. I must ask you a favor, Gawain." "Anything except these," he said simply. "I will not harm Elaine or Andor, and I will not become dragonsworn. Anything else in my power is yours." Heads turned toward them. Any mention of dragonsworn caught ears. Four hard-faced men with wagon drivers' whips coiled over their shoulders glared at Gawain, cracking their knuckles the way some men did before fighting. Gawain only looked at them. They were not small men, but their belligerence faded under his gaze. Two actually knuckled their foreheads to him before they all slipped away into the river of people. But there were still too many staring, too many trying to look as if they were not listening. Dressed as she was, she attracted eyes without saying a word. Add in a man with red-gold hair well over a span tall who looked a warder, and the combination could not help but draw attention. "I need to speak with you privately," she said. "If any woman has bonded Gawain Warder, I'll—" Curiously, the thought had no real heat. Without a word, he took her to a nearby inn, the Long Man, where a golden crown tossed to the round innkeeper produced an almost reverent curtsy, and a small private dining room, dark-paneled, with heavily polished table and chairs and dried flowers in a blue vase on the hearth. Gawain closed the door, and a sudden awkwardness descended as they faced each other alone. Light, but he was gorgeous, easily as gorgeous as Galad, and the way his hair curled around his ears. Gawain cleared his throat. "The heat seems to get worse every day." He pulled out a handkerchief and wiped his face, then offered it to her. Abruptly realizing it was used, he cleared his throat again. "I have another, I think." She produced her own while he was searching his pockets. "Gawain, how can you serve Elida after what she did?" "The younglings serve the tower," he replied stiffly, but his head swung uneasily. "We do as long as Swan Sanche." For a moment his eyes went icy cold, just for an instant. "Egwene, my mother always used to say, even a queen must obey the law she makes or there is no law." He shook his head angrily. "I shouldn't be surprised to find you here. I should have known you would be where Al-Thor is."
"Why do you hate him?"
That had been hate in his voice or she had never heard it. "Gawain, he really is the dragon reborn. You must have heard what happened in Tyr. He—"
"I do not care if he is the creator made flesh," he grated. "Al-Thor killed my mother."
Egwene's eyes nearly popped out of her head.
"Gawain, no! No, he did not!"
"Can you swear it? Were you there when she died? It's on every tongue. The dragon reborn took Camlann and killed Morghaes. He probably killed Elaine, too. I can find no word of her."
All the anger drained out of him. He slumped where he stood, head falling forward, fists clenched and eyes closed.
"I can find out nothing," he whispered.
"Elaine is unharmed," Egwene said, surprised to find herself right in front of him. She reached up and surprised herself again by running her fingers into his hair as she raised his head. It felt just as she remembered. Her hands flashed back as if burned. She was sure she would flush so crimson her face would ignite, except color stained Gawain's cheeks. Of course. He remembered, too, though only as his own dream. That truly should have set her face afire, but somehow it did the opposite. Gawain's blush steadied her nerves, even made her want to smile. "Elaine is safe, Gawain. I can swear to that."
"Where is she?"
His voice was anguished.
"Where has she been? Her place is in Camlann now. Well, not Camlann, not so long as Al-Thor might be there, but in Andor. Where is she, Egwene?"
"I cannot tell you. I can't, Gawain."
He studied her, face expressionless, then sighed.
"You are more Aes Sedai every time I see you."
His laugh sounded forced.
"Do you know I used to think about being your warder? How is that for foolish?"
"You will be my warder."
She had not realized the words were coming out of her mouth until they did, but once they did, she knew they were true. That dream. Gawain kneeling for her to hold his head. It could have meant 100 things or nothing, but she knew. He grinned at her.
"The idiot thought she was joking."
"Not me, surely. Galad, I think. Though you'll have to beat away other Aes Sedai with a stick. Aes Sedai, serving girls, queens, chambermaids, merchants, farm wives. I've seen them all look at him. Don't bother claiming you don't think he's—"
The simplest way to silence that nonsense was to put a hand over his mouth. "I do not love Galad. I love you,"
The man still tried to pretend it was a jest, smiling against her fingers.
I cannot be a warder. I'm to be Elaine's first prince of the sword.
If the Queen of Andor can be Aes Sedai, a prince can be a warder. And you will be mine. Push that through your thick skull. I am serious. And I love you.
He stared at her. At least he was not smiling anymore. But he said nothing. Just stared. She took her hand away.
Well, aren't you going to say anything?
When you wish for so long that you could hear something, he said slowly. And then, suddenly, with no warning, you do. It is like a lightning strike and rain on parched ground at the same time. You're stunned, but you cannot hear enough.
I love you, I love you, I love you, she told him, smiling. Well?
For answer, he picked her up and kissed her. It was every bit as good as the dreams. It was better. It was... When he finally set her down, she clung to his arms. Her knees did not seem to be working properly.
My Lady Aiel Egwene Aes Sedai, he said, I love you, and I cannot wait for you to bond me.
Shedding mock formality, he added in a softer tone,
I love you, Egwene Alvear.
You said you wanted a favor.
What?
The moon on a necklace? I'll set a goldsmith to work within the hour. Stars to wear in your hair? I will...
Don't tell Coiran or the others that I am here. Don't mention me to them at all.
She expected some hesitation, but he simply said, They'll not learn of you from me, or from anyone else, can I help it? He paused for a moment, then took her by the shoulders.
Egwene, I will not ask why you're here.
No, just listen. I know Swan mired you in her schemes, and I understand that you feel loyalty to a man from your own village. That doesn't matter. You should be in the White Tower studying. I remember them all saying you were going to be a powerful Aes Sedai one day. Do you have a plan for returning without penalties? She shook her head wordlessly, and he went on in a rush.
Maybe I can think of something if you don't first. I know you had no choice but to obey Swan, but I doubt Elida will give that much weight. Even mentioning the name Swan Sanchi around her is nearly as much as your head is worth. I will find some way, somehow, I swear it. But promise me that until I do, you will not do anything foolish.
His hands tightened for a moment, almost to the point of pain.
Just promise me you will be careful.
Light, but this was a fine pickle. She could not tell him she had no intention of returning to the tower as long as Elida sat on the Ammerlin seat. And something foolish almost certainly meant anything to do with Rand.
He looked so worried. For her. I will be careful, Gawain, I promise.
As careful as I can be, she amended to herself. It was only a small change, but somehow it made what she had to say next more difficult.
I have a second favor to ask. Rand did not kill your mother.
How could she word this to put the least strain on him? Strain or no, she had to.
Promise me you will not raise a hand against Rand until I can prove he didn't.
I swear.
Again no hesitation, but his voice was rough, and his hand squeezed again briefly, harder than before. She did not flinch. The slight pain felt like a repayment for the pain she was causing him.
It has to be that way, Gawain. He did not do it, but it will take time to prove. How under the light could she?
Rand's word would not be enough. All such a tangle. She had to concentrate on one thing at a time. What were those Aes Sedai up to?
Gawain startled her by drawing a ragged breath.
I will give over everything, betray everything for you. Come away with me, Egwene. We will both leave it all behind. I have a small estate south of Whitebridge, with a vineyard and a village, so far into the country that the sun rises 2 days late. The world will hardly touch us there. We can be married on the way. I don't know how much time we will have. Althor, Tarman Gaiden, I do not know, but we will have it together.
She stared up at him in amazement. Then she realized she had voiced that last thought aloud. What were those Aes Sedai up to? And a key word, betray, slid into place. He thought she wanted him to spy on them, and he would. Desperately seeking a way not to, he still would if she asked. Anything he had promised, and anything he meant, whatever the cost to him. She made a promise to herself, to him really, but it was not the sort of promise she could speak aloud. If he let slip something she could use, she would, she had to. But she would not dig, not for the smallest scrap, whatever the cost. Sareen Namdahl would never understand, but it was the only way she could match what he had laid at her feet.
"I cannot," she said softly. "You can never know how much I want to, but I cannot."
She laughed abruptly, feeling tears in her eyes.
"And you? Betray? Gawain, Trakand? That word fits you as darkness fits the sun."
Unspoken promises were all very well, but she could not leave it at that. She would use what he gave her, use it against what he believed. There had to be an offering.
"I sleep in the tents, but every morning I walk in the city. I come through the Dragon Wall gate, not long after sunrise."
He understood, of course, her offering of faith in his word, her freedom put in his pocket. He took her hands in both of his, turned them so he could kiss her palms gently. "A precious thing, what you've given me to hold. If I go to the Dragon Wall gate every morning, someone is sure to notice, and I may not be able to get away every morning, but do not be too surprised if I appear beside you shortly after you enter the city most days." When Egwene finally got back outside, the sun had moved a considerable distance into the hottest part of the afternoon, thinning the crowds a little. Saying goodbye had taken longer than she thought it would. Kissing Gawain might not be the sort of exercise the wise ones intended her to take, but her heart was still racing as if she had been running. Putting him firmly out of mind, well, pushing him to the back with some effort, putting him out seemed to be beyond her. She returned to her vantage point beside the stable. Someone was still channeling inside the mansion, more than one probably, unless that one was weaving something large. The feel was less than earlier, but still strong. A woman was going into the house, a dark-haired woman Egwene did not recognize, though the agelessness of that hard face marked her. She did not try to eavesdrop again and did not stay long. If they were going in and out, there was too much chance of being seen and recognized despite her clothes. But as she hurried away, one thought hammered at her. What were they up to? "We intend to offer him escort to Tar Valon," Katerina Alruddin said, shifting slightly. She could never decide whether Cairhien and chairs were as uncomfortable as they looked, or one merely believed they were because they looked so uncomfortable. "Once he leaves Cairhien for Tar Valon, there will be a vacuum here." Unsmiling in the gilded chair opposite her, the Lady Colavere leaned forward slightly. "You interest me, Katerina Sedai." "Leave us," she snapped the servants. Katerina smiled. "We intend to offer him escort to Tar Valon," Nasuna said precisely, but she felt the smallest flash of irritation. Despite a smooth face, the Tyran kept shifting his feet, anxious in the presence of an Aes Sedai, perhaps apprehensive that she might channel. Only an Amadisian would have been worse. "Once he departs for Tar Valon, there will be a need for strength in Cairhien." The High Lord Mylan licked his lips. "Why do you tell me this?" Nasuna's smile might have meant anything. When Serene entered the sitting room, only Cairhien and Arian were there sipping at tea, and a servant waiting to pour, of course. Serene motioned him out. "Berylaine, she may prove to be difficult," she said once the door closed. "I do not know whether the apple or the whip will work best with her. I am supposed to see Arracombe tomorrow, am I not? But I think that more time will be necessary with Berylaine."
"Apple or whip," Arian said in a tight voice. "Whichever do be necessary."
Her face might have been pale marble framed by raven's wings. Serene's secret vice was poetry, though she would never have let anyone know she could be interested in something so emotional. She would have died of shame had Vitalien, her warder,
ever discovered that she had written lines comparing him to a leopard, among other graceful, powerful, and dangerous animals. "Pull yourself together, Arion." As usual, Koiran sounded as if she were making a speech. "What troubles her, Serene, is a rumor that Galena heard, a rumor that a green sister was in Tyr with young Randall Thor and is now here in Cairhien." She always called him young Randall Thor, as though reminding her listeners that he was young and therefore inexperienced. "Moiraine and a green," Serene mused. That could indeed indicate trouble. Elida insisted that Moiraine and Swan had acted alone in letting Al-Thor run without guidance, but if even one additional Aes Sedai was involved, it might mean others had been as well, and that was a string that might lead all the way to some, perhaps many, of those who had fled the tower when Swan was deposed. "Still, it is only the rumor." "Perhaps not," Galena said as she slipped into the chamber. "Have you not heard? Someone channeled at us this morning. For what purpose I cannot say, but we can imagine very closely, I believe." The beads worked in Serene's tiny dark braids made clicking noises as she shook her head. "It is not the proof of a green Galena. It is not even the proof of an Aes Sedai. I have heard the tales that some Aiel women can channel, these wise women. It could be some poor wretch who was put out of the tower for failing the test as accepted." Galena smiled, a sliver of teeth in night-eyed sternness. "I think it is proof of Moiraine. I have heard she had a trick of eavesdropping, and I do not believe this story of her so conveniently dead with no corpse seen and no one able to tell details." That bothered Serene as well, partly because she had liked Moiraine. They had been friends as novices and accepted, though Moiraine was a year ahead, and that friendship had continued over their few meetings in the years since, and partly because it was too vague and too convenient, Moiraine dying, vanishing, really, when an arrest warrant hung over her. Moiraine might well be capable of faking her own death under those circumstances. "So you believe we have both Moiraine and a green sister whose name we do not know to deal with? It is still only the speculation, Galena." Galena's smile did not change, but her eyes glittered. She was too hard for logic. She believed what she believed, whatever the evidence. Yet Serene had always believed great fires roared somewhere in Galena's depths. "What I believe," Galena said, "is that Moiraine is the so-called Green. What better way to hide from arrests than to die and reappear as someone else of another Aja? I have even heard that this Green is short. We all know Moiraine is far from a tall woman." Arion had sat up stony straight, her brown eyes large, smoldering coals of outrage. "When we lay hands on this green sister," Galena told her, "I propose that we give her into your charge for the journey back to the tower." Arion nodded sharply, but the heat did not fade from her eyes. Serene felt stunned. Moiraine? Claim another Aja than her own? Surely not. Serene had never married. It was illogical to believe two people could remain compatible for a lifetime, but the only thing she could compare that to was sleeping with another woman's husband. But it was the charge that stunned her, not the possibility that it might be true. She was about to point out that there were many short women in the world, and that shortness was relative, when Koiran spoke in that billowing voice. "Serene, you must take your turn again. We must be prepared, whatever happens." "I do not like it," Arion said firmly. "It does be like preparing for failure." "It is only logical," Serene told her. "Dividing time into the smallest possible increments, it is impossible to say with any true certainty what will happen between one and the next. Since chasing Al-Thor to Camelin might mean we would arrive to find that he has come here, we remain here with as much certainty as we can have, that he will eventually return. Yet that could be tomorrow or a month from now. Any single event in any hour of that wait, or any combination of events, could leave us with no alternative. Thus, preparation is logical." "Very nicely explained," Arion said dryly. She had no head for logic. Sometimes Serene thought that beautiful women did not, though there was no logic in the connection that she could see.
"We have as much time as we need," Koiran pronounced.
When she was not making a speech, she made pronouncements.
"Beldine arrived today and took a room near the river, but Mayam is not due for 2 days. We must take care, and that gives us time."
"I still do not like preparing for failure," Arian murmured into her teacup.
"I will not take it amiss," Galena said. "If we find time to take Moiraine to justice. We have waited this long. There is not that much hurry with Althor."
Serene sighed. They did very well at the things they did, but she could not understand it. There was barely a logical bone in one of them. Retiring upstairs to her chambers, she seated herself in front of the cold fireplace and began to channel. Could this Rand Althor really have rediscovered how to travel? It surpassed belief, yet it was the only explanation. What sort of man was he? That she would discover when she met him, not before. Filled with Sidar nearly to the point where sweetness became pain, she began running through novice exercises. They were as good as anything. Preparation was only logical.
Chapter 26. Connecting Lines. Thunder rolled across the low brown grassland hills in a continuous peal, though the sky held not a cloud, only the burning sun, still with a way to climb. On a hilltop, Rand held the reins and the dragon scepter on the pommel of his saddle and waited. The thunder swelled. It was hard not to look over his shoulder constantly, south toward Alana. She had bruised her heel this morning and scraped her hand, and she was in a temper. How and what for, he had no notion. He had no real notion how he could be so sure. The thunder crested. The Saldaean horsemen appeared over the next rise, three abreast at a dead gallop in a long snake that kept coming, down the slope into the broad sweep between the hills. 9,000 men made a very long snake. At the foot of the slope they divided, the center column coming on, while the others peeled off to left and right, each column dividing again and again until they rode by hundreds, swooping past one another. Riders began standing on their saddles, sometimes on their feet, sometimes on hands. Others swung impossibly low to slap the ground on first one side of their galloping mounts, then the other. Men left their saddles entirely to crawl underneath speeding horses, or dropped to the ground to run a pace beside the animal before leaping back into the saddle, then dropping on the other side to repeat the performance. Rand lifted his reins and heeled Jaden. As the Dapple moved, so did the Aiel surrounding him. This morning the men were mountain dancers, Hama and Dor, more than half wearing the headband of Siswayamon. Calden, graying and leathery, had tried to get Rand to let him bring more than 20, what with so many armed wetlanders about. None of the Aiel wasted any time with disparaging looks for Rand's sword. Nandera spent more time watching the 200-odd women who trailed after them on horses. She seemed to find more threat in the Saldaean ladies and officers' wives than in the soldiers, and having met some of the Saldaean women, Rand was not ready to argue. Sulin would probably have agreed. It occurred to him that he had not seen Sulin in... not since returning from Shadar-Logoth. 8 days. He wondered if he had done something to offend her. This was no time to worry about Sulin or Geato. He circled around the valley until he reached the hilltop over which the Saldaeans had first appeared to him. Bashir himself rode about down there, examining first one group as they went through their paces, then another. Almost coincidentally, he just happened to do this standing up on his saddle. For an instant, Rand seized Saidin and released it a heartbeat later. With his vision enhanced, it had not been difficult to see the two white stones lying near the foot of the slope, right where Bashir had placed them personally last night, 4 paces apart. With luck, no one had seen him. With luck, no one would ask too many questions about this morning. Below, some men were riding 2 horses now, a foot on each saddle, still at a dead gallop. Others had a man on their shoulders, sometimes in a handstand. He looked around at the sound of a horse walking toward him. Dira ni Galin Tabashir rode through the Aiel with seeming unconcern, armed only with a small knife at her silver belt, in a riding dress of gray silk embroidered in silver down the sleeves and on the high neck. She appeared to be daring them to attack her. As tall as many of the maidens, nearly a hand taller than her husband, she was a big woman. Not stout, nor even plump, simply big. She had wings of white in her black hair, and her dark tilted eyes were fixed on Rand. He suspected she was a beautiful woman when his presence did not turn her face to granite. "Is my husband amusing you?" She never gave Rand a title, never used his name. He looked at the other Saldaean women. They watched him like a troop of cavalry ready to charge, faces also granite, tilted eyes icy. All they awaited was Dira's command. He could well believe the stories of Saldaean women taking up fallen husbands' swords and leading their men back into battle. Being pleasant had gotten him exactly nowhere with Bashir's wife. Bashir himself only shrugged and said she was a difficult woman at times, all the while grinning with what could only be pride. "Tell Lord Bashir I am pleased," he said. Turning Jadon, he started back toward Camelin. The Saldaean women's eyes seemed to press against his back. Luz Theron was giggling. That was the only word for it. "Never prod at a woman unless you must. She will kill you faster than a man and for less reason, even if she weeps over it after." "Are you really there?" Rand demanded. "Is there more to you than a voice?" Only that soft, mad laughter answered. He stewed over Luz Theron all the way back to Camelin, and even after they had ridden past one of the long markets of tile roofs, lining the approaches to the gates and into the new city. He worried over going mad, not just the fact of it, though that was bad enough. If he went insane, how could he do what he had to do? But he had seen no sign of it. But then, if his mind did crack, would he know it? He had never seen a madman. All he had to go by was Luz Theron maundering in his head. Did all men go mad alike? Would he end like that, laughing and weeping over things no one else saw or knew? He knew he had a chance to live, if a seemingly impossible one. "If you would live, you must die." That was one of three things he knew must be true, told to him inside a Tirangreal, where the answers were always true, if apparently never easy to understand. But to live like that, he was not sure he would not rather die. The crowds in the new city gave way before more than 40 Aiel, and a handful recognized the Dragon Reborn as well. Maybe more did, but it was a ragged handful of cheers that went up as he rode by. The light shine on the Dragon Reborn, and the glory of the light for the Dragon Reborn, and the Dragon Reborn, King of Andor. That last one jilted him whenever he heard it, and he heard it more than once. He had to find Elaine. He could feel his teeth grinding. He could not look at the people in the street. He wanted to smash them to their knees, roar at them that Elaine was their queen. Trying not to hear, he studied the sky, the rooftops, anything but the crowd. And that was why he saw the man in a white cloak rise up on a red-tiled rooftop and lift a crossbow. Everything happened in heartbeats. Rand seized Sidene and channeled as the bolt flew toward him. It struck air, a silvery blue mass hanging above the street, with a clang as of metal against metal. A ball of fire leaped from Rand's hand, struck the crossbowman in the chest as the bolt was bouncing away from the shield of air. Flames engulfed the man, and he fell shrieking from the rooftop. And someone leaped into Rand, carrying him out of the saddle. He hit the paving stones hard, with a weight atop him. Breath and Sidene left him together. Struggling for air, he wrestled with the weight, wrenched it off, and found himself holding Desora by the arms. She smiled at him, a beautiful smile. Then her head slumped sideways. Sightless blue eyes stared at him, already glazing. The crossbow bolt, standing out from her ribs, pressed against his wrist. Why had she ever wanted to hide such a beautiful smile? Hands seized him and hauled him to his feet. Maidens and mountain dancers pushed him to the side of the street, close against the front of a tinsmith's shop, and formed a tight, veiled circle around him, horn bows in hand, eyes searching street and rooftops. Shouts and screams rang everywhere, but the street was already clear for better than 50 paces either way, and then it was a milling mass of people struggling to get away. The street was clear except for bodies. Desora and 6 others, 3 of them Aiel. One more a maiden, he thought. It was hard to be sure from a distance, with someone lying crumpled like a heap of rags. Rand moved, and the Aiel around him pressed together more tightly, a wall of flesh. "These places are rabbit warrens," Nandera said conversationally, without letting her eyes stop their search above her veil. "If you join the dance in there, you can take a blade in the back before you know there's danger." Calden nodded. "This reminds me of a time near Cedar Cut when... we have a prisoner, at least." Some of his Hamandor had appeared from a tavern across the street, pushing ahead of them, a man with his arms and elbows bound behind him. He continued to struggle until they shoved him to his knees in the paving stone and laid spear points against his throat. "Perhaps he will tell us who commanded this." Calden sounded as though he did not doubt it in the least. A moment later, maidens came out of another building with a second bound man, who was limping, his face covered in blood. In short order, 4 men knelt in the street under Aiel guard. Finally, the semicircle hemming Rand loosened. The 4 were hard-faced men all, though the blood-smeared fellow swayed and rolled his eyes at the Aiel. 2 others wore sullen defiance, the 4th a sneer. Rand's hands twitched. "Are you sure they were part of it?" He could not believe how soft his voice sounded, how steady. Balefire would solve everything.
"Not Balefire," Luce Theron panted at him. "Never again."
"Are you sure?" "They were," a maiden said. He could not see who, behind her veil. "Those we killed all wore this." She tugged a cloak free from behind the bloodied man's bound arms. A worn white cloak, grimy and stained, with a golden sunburst embroidered on the chest. The other 3 had them, too.
"These were set to watch," a broad mountain dancer added, "and report if the attack went badly for the others."
He laughed a short bark.
"Whoever sent them did not know how badly it would go."
"None of these fellows fired a crossbow?" Rand asked.
"Balefire."
"No!"
Luce Theron shrieked in the distance. The Aiel exchanged glances, shook Shufa-wrapped heads.
"Hang them," Rand said.
The bloody-faced man nearly collapsed. Rand seized him in flows of air, dragged him to his feet. It was the first he realized that he held Saideen. He welcomed the struggle for survival. He even welcomed the taint, staining his bones like acid slime. It made him less aware of things he would rather not remember, emotions he would rather not have.
"What is your name?"
"Farrell, m'lord. Dimir Farrell."
Eyes almost popping out of his head, stared at Rand through that mask of blood.
"Please don't hang me, m'lord. I'll walk in the light, I swear."
"You are a very lucky man, Dimir Farrell."
Rand's voice sounded as distant in his own ears as Luz Theron's cries.
"You are going to watch your friends hang."
Farrell began to weep.
"Then you'll be given a horse, and you will go tell Pedro Nile that one day I will hang him too for what happened here."
When he loosed the flows of air, Farrell collapsed in a heap, moaning that he would ride to Amador without stopping. The 3 who were to die stared contemptuously at the sobbing man. One of them spat at him. Rand put them out of his mind. Nile was the only one he had to remember. There was something else he had to do yet. He pushed away Sayadin, went through the struggle to escape it without being obliterated, the struggle to make himself release it. For what he had to do, he wanted no screen between him and his emotions. A maiden was straightening Desora's body. She had raised Desora's veil. She reached to stop him when he touched that piece of black algode, then hesitated, looking at his face, and settled back on her haunches. Lifting the veil, he memorized Desora's face. She looked as if she were sleeping now. Desora of the Musara Sept of the Rain Aiel. So many names. Laya of the Kosaida Charin. And Dailan of the Iron Mountain Tardad. And Lamella of the Smokewater Miagoma. And so many. Sometimes he ran down that list name by name. There was one name in it he had not added. Ilyena Theron Murella. He did not know how Luce Theron had put it there, but he would not have erased it if he knew how. It was both an effort and a relief to turn away from Desora, a pure relief to find that what he thought was a second dead maiden was instead a man, short for an Aielman. He hurt for the men who died for him, but with them he could remember an old saying, "Let the dead rest and care for the living." Not easily, but he could make himself do it. He could not even make himself summon the words when it was a woman who had died. Skirts spread on the paving stones caught his eye. Not only Aiel had died. She had taken a crossbow bolt squarely between the shoulder blades. Almost no blood stained the back of her dress. It had been quick, a small mercy. Kneeling, he turned her over as gently as he could. The other end of the bolt stood out from her chest. It was a square face, a woman in her middle years, a touch of gray in her hair. Her dark eyes were open wide. She looked surprised. He did not know her name, but he memorized her face. She had died for being on the same street with him. He caught at Nandera's arm, and she shook his hand free, not wanting the use of her bow impaired, but she did look at him. "Find this woman's family and see that they have whatever they need." "Gold?" It was not enough. What they needed was a wife back, a mother back. He could not give them that. "See to them," he said. "And find out her name." Nandera stretched a hand toward him, then put it back to her bow. When he stood, the maidens were watching him. Oh, they were watching everything as usual, but those veiled faces turned toward him a little more often. Sulin knew how he felt, if she did not know about the list, but he had no idea whether she had told the others. If she had, he had no idea how they felt about it. Walking back to where he had fallen, he picked up the tasseled dragon scepter. Bending was an effort, and the short length of spear felt heavy. Jaden had not gone far once his saddle was empty. The horse was well trained. Rand climbed onto the Dapple's back. "I've done as much as I can here," he said. "Let them think whatever they wanted," and dug in his heels. If he could not outdistance memory, he outdistanced the Aiel. For a time, at least. He handed Jaden over to a stableman and was inside the palace before Nandera and Calden caught up to him, with about two-thirds the number of maidens and mountain dancers they had had. Some had been left to care for the dead. Calden looked sourly irritated. From the heat in Nandera's eyes, Rand thought he should be glad she was not veiled. Before she could speak, Mistress Harfor approached Rand and curtsied deeply.
"My lord dragon," she said in a deep, strong voice, "there is a petition for audience with you from the wave mistress of Clan Catalar of the Athan Mier."
If the fine cut of Rina's red and white dress was not enough to say that first maid was a misnomer, her manner certainly was. A slightly plump woman with graying hair and a long chin, she looked Rand right in the eye, tilting her head back to manage it, and somehow combined a proper degree of deference, an utter lack of obsequiousness, and an aloofness
most noble women could not attain. Like Halwyn Nori, she had stayed when most others fled, though Rand half suspected that her motive had been to defend and preserve the palace from invaders. He would not have been surprised to learn that she periodically searched his chambers for hidden palace valuables. He would not have been surprised to learn she tried to search the Aiel. "Sea folk," he said. "What do they want?" She gave him a patient look, trying to make allowances, very plainly trying. "The petition does not say, my lord dragon." If Moraine had known anything about the sea folk, she had not made it part of his education. But from Rena's attitude, this woman was important. A wave mistress certainly sounded important. That would mean the Grand Hall. He had not been there since returning from Kyrian. Not that he had any reason to avoid the throne room. There just had been no need to go there. "This afternoon," he said slowly. "Tell her I will see her in the mid-afternoon. You've given her good apartments and her retinue?" He doubted anyone with so grand a title traveled alone. "She refused them. They have taken rooms at the Ball and Hoop." Her mouth flattened slightly. Apparently, however lofty a wave mistress, that was not proper in Rena Harfor's eyes. "They were very dusty and travel-sore, hardly able to stand. They came by horse, not coach, and I do not believe they are used to horses." She blinked as if surprised to have unbent that much, and regained her reserve like donning a cloak. "Someone else wishes to see you, my lord dragon." Her tone picked up the faintest hint of distaste. "The Lady Elenia." Rand almost grimaced himself. No doubt Elenia had another lecture prepared on her claims to the Lion Throne. So far, he had managed not to hear more than one word in three. She would be easy enough to turn down. Still, he really should know something of Andor's history, and no one handy knew more of it than Elenia Sarand. "Send her to me in my rooms, please." "Do you really mean the daughter heir to have the throne?" Rena's tone was not harsh, but all deference was gone. Her face had not changed, yet Rand was sure that with a wrong answer she would shout, "For Elaine and the White Lion," and try to bash his brains in, Aiel or no Aiel. "I do," he sighed. "The Lion Throne is Elaine's. By the light in my hope of rebirth and salvation it is." Rena studied him a moment, then spread her skirts in another deep curtsy. "I will send her to you, my lord dragon." Her back was stiff as she glided away, but it always was. There were no telling whether she believed a word. "A crafty enemy," Calden said heatedly before Rena had gone 5 paces, "will set a weak ambush you are meant to break through. Confident because you have dealt with the threat, your guard relaxed, you walk into the second, stronger ambush." Right on top of Calden, Nandera said in a cold voice, "Young men can be impetuous. Young men can be rash. Young men can be fools. But the Karakarn cannot let himself be a young man." Rand glanced over his shoulder before starting off, just long enough to say, "We're back inside the palace now. Choose your two." It was little surprise that Nandera and Calden chose themselves, and none at all that they strode after him, wrapped in a hard silence. At the door to his apartments, he told them to send Elenia in when she came, and left them in the corridor. There was plum punch in a silver-chased pitcher waiting, but he did not touch it. Instead, he stood staring at it, trying to plan out what he was going to say, until he realized what he was doing and grunted in surprise. What was there to plan? A tap at the door announced honey-haired Elenia, who swept a curtsy in a dress worked with golden roses. On any other woman, Rand would have thought they were just roses. On Elenia, they had to stand for the rose crown.
"My lord dragon is most gracious to receive me."
"I want to ask you some things about Andor's history," Rand said.
Will you take plum punch?
Elenia's eyes widened in delight before she could stop them. Undoubtedly she had planned how to work Rand around to this in order to lead into her claims, and here it was handed to her. A smile bloomed on her fox-like face.
"May I have the honor of pouring for my Lord Dragon?" she said, not waiting for him to wave his assent.
She was so pleased with the turn of events that he almost expected her to press him into a chair and urge him to put his feet up.
"Upon what point of history may I shed light?"
"A general sort of..." Rand frowned. That would give the excuse to be listing her ancestry in detail inside of two sentences. That is, how Sauron Maravale came to bring his wife here. Was he from Camelon?
Ishara brought Sauron, my Lord Dragon.
Elenia's smile turned briefly indulgent.
Ishara's mother was Endara Castellane, who was Utter Hawkwing's governor here then. The province was called Andor. And also the daughter of Joal Ramadar, the last king of Aldashar. Sauron was only a general.
She had been going to say a commoner. He would have wagered on it.
Though Hawkwing's finest, of course. Endara resigned her warrant and knelt to Ishara as queen.
Somehow Rand did not believe it had happened quite that way, or so smoothly.
They were the worst of times, of course. Quite as bad as the Trolloc Wars, I am sure. With Hawkwing dead, every noble thought to become High King, or High Queen. Ishara knew that no one would be able to take it all, though. There were too many factions, and alliances broke as soon as made. She convinced Sauron to raise the siege of Tarvalin, and brought him and as much of his army as he could hold together here.
"Sauron Maravale was the one besieging Tarvalin?" Rand said, startled. Arthur Hawkwing had laid a 20-year siege against Tarvalin, and put a price on the head of every Aes Sedai.
"The final year of it," she said, a touch impatiently, "as nearly as the histories record."
It was plain she had little real interest in Sauron, except as Ishara's husband.
"Ishara was wise. She promised the Aes Sedai that her eldest daughter would be sent to study in the White Tower, thus gaining the tower's backing and an Aes Sedai advisor, named Balair, the first ruler to do so. Others did follow, of course, but they still wanted Hawkwing's throne."
She had the bit in her teeth now, face animated, goblet forgotten, gesturing with her free hand. Words bubbled out.
"A full generation passed before that idea died, although Narasim Buron did try as late as the last 10 years of the War of the Hundred Years, a dismal failure that ended with his head on a pike after a year, and as Mara Gitaris's effort some 30 years earlier gained considerable ground before she tried to conquer Andor and spent the last 12 years of her life as the guest of Queen Taliesin. Esmara was assassinated in the end, though there is no record of why anyone would want her dead once Taliesin broke her power. You see, the queens who came after Ishara, from Alisinda to Lindella, followed what she began, and not only in sending a daughter to the tower. Ishara had Sauron secure the land around Camelon first, only a few villages in the beginning, then slowly expanded her control. Why, it took 5 years for her sway to reach the River Arryn. But the land that Andor's queens held was solidly theirs, when most others who called themselves kings or queens were still more interested in gaining new lands than in solidifying what they already had.
She paused for breath, and Rand leaped in quickly. Elenia spoke of these people as if she knew them personally, but his head was spinning with names he had never heard before.
"Why is there no House Maravale?" "None of Ishara's sons lived past 20.
Elenia shrugged and sipped her punch. The subject did not interest her.
But it did give her a new topic. 9 queens reigned over the course of the War of the Hundred Years, and none had a son live beyond 23. The battles were constant, and Andor was pressed from every side. Why, in Maragain's reign, 4 kings brought armies against her, There is a town named for the battle on the site.
The kings were... But all the queens have been descendants of Sauron and Ishara, Rand put in quickly. The woman would give him a day-by-day account if he let her. Sitting, he motioned her to take a chair.
Yes, she said reluctantly,
probably reluctant to include Sauron. But she brightened immediately.
You see, it is a matter of how much of Ishara's blood one has, how many lines connect you to her, and in what degree. In my case,
it isn't easy for me to understand. For example, take Tigraine and Morghese. Morghese had the best claim to succeed Tigraine. I suppose that means Morghese and Tigraine were closely related?
They were cousins.
Elenia made an effort to hide her irritation over being interrupted so often, especially now that she was so close to the heart of what she wanted to say. But her mouth still narrowed. She looked like a fox who wanted to bite, but the chicken kept slipping just out of reach.
I see. Cousins.
Rand drank deeply, half-emptying his goblet.
We are all cousins, all the houses.
His silence seemed to invigorate her. Her smile returned.
With marriages over 1,000 years, there is not a house without some drop of Ishara's blood. But the degree is what is important. That and the number of connecting lines. In my case,
Rand blinked.
You're all cousins? All of you? That doesn't seem po—
He leaned forward intently.
Elenia, if Morghese and Tigraine had been merchants or farmers, how closely would they have been related? Farmers? She exclaimed, staring at him. My Lord Dragon, what a peculiar—
The blood drained slowly from her face. He had been a farmer, after all. She wet her lips, a nervous flicker of the tongue.
I suppose— I should have to think. Farmers. I suppose that means imagining all the houses as farmers.
A nervous titter broke from her before she drowned it in her punch.
Had they been farmers, I don't think anyone would consider them related at all. All the connections are too far back. But they were not, my Lord Dragon.
He stopped listening with more than half an ear and sank back in his chair. Not related.
Have 31 lines to Ishara, while Dailin has only 30, and—
Why did he feel so relaxed suddenly? Knots had vanished from his muscles that he had not even known were there until they went.
If I may say so, my Lord Dragon.
What? Forgive me. My mind wandered for a moment. The problems of— I missed the last thing you said. There had been something in it that had tugged at his ear, though. Elenia wore the obsequious, flattering smile that looked so strange on her face.
Why, I was just saying that you yourself bear some resemblance to Tigraine, my Lord Dragon. You might even have some touch of Ishara's blood, your—
She cut off with a squeak, and he realized he was on his feet.
I feel a little tired.
He tried to make his voice normal, but it sounded as distant as if he were deep in the void.
If you would leave me, please.
He did not know how his face looked, but Elenia bounced out of her chair, hurried to set her goblet on the table. She was trembling, and if her face had been bloodless before, now it looked like snow. Dropping a curtsy deep enough for a scullery maid caught stealing, she hurried toward the door, each step faster than the last, all the while watching him over her shoulder until she tore the door open, and the sound of running slippers receded down the hall. Nandera put her head in, checking on him, before pulling the door shut. For a long time, Rand stood staring at nothing. No wonder those ancient queens had been staring at him. They knew what he was thinking when he did not himself. That sudden worm of worry that had gnawed at him unseen since he discovered his mother's real name. But Tigraine had not been related to Morghese. His mother had not been related to Elaine's mother. He was not related to— You're worse than a lecher, he said aloud bitterly. You're a fool and a—
He wished Luzthern would speak, so he could say to himself, "That is a madman. I am sane." Was it those dead rulers of Andor he felt staring at him, or was it Alana? Striding to the door, he jerked it open. Nandera and Kaldin were sitting on their heels beneath a tapestry of brightly colored birds. "Assemble your people," he told them. "I'm going to Kyrian. Please don't tell Avienda."